Tonight, something very special for all of you. A man who's worked this program honestly and diligently for 44 years. I met Al in the year 2000 when I moved up here to marry the woman of my dream. And that didn't work out. And I remember meeting Al. I heard him share at the first at the Saturday morning AA meeting, and he said he had had two wives and he was remarried. And I thought to myself, that's my man. I need to talk to him. And then I later found out that both those wives died. And I thought, well, what kind of message is that sending me? Do I go out and shoot this current wife or what? You know. But Al walked me through that and several other things that you know, only someone that knows us can. And that is a beautiful, it's a beautiful relationship, and I cherish it dearly. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce Al from Carlsbad.
My name's Al, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive, safe, sane, and sober. And I got sober and discontinued abusing other lovely things that I used to like to take on May 9th, 1971. And I can't tell you what a ride this has been. Gives me goosebumps to think about it. And not to say that they have a thing going around the country called seniors in sobriety. And I was doing the old timers meeting, and a guy by the name of Harry P. was celebrating that weekend 60 years of unbroken recovery. That is impressive. Okay, so I'm 83. Shit, I'll never make it. Yeah, you're laughing now because, you know, I look around in here and I don't see many old people. Really, I got to tell you something. When I moved up here, I was a long-distance runner and so on and so forth, and then I went to work at Vandenberg, all that BS, and so on. I was a long-distance runner and 165 pounds and 5'10 and a quarter. I walk maybe a half a mile or a mile three or four times a week, and I'm now 5'9". And I'm thinking, what the hell happened? Everything changes when you grow older. For instance, I got hair, but it migrates. And it's impossible to shave your ears, I can guarantee you. And you know how I suppose all men are about the same. They get out of the shower and they do this. Shit, they've all gone south. Then I turned around one day and I went, where'd that go? It is a trip growing old, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I live very close to my youngest daughter and her husband, another Irishman, Strachan. And about once a month they call me and they like to go out and have pancakes, and I like to do the same thing. My son lives down in San Diego. My oldest daughter lives in Vista. And they're all close. But my second daughter, who lived down in San Diego, and I really wanted to share this with people that I've known a great number of years. We called her Sis. She passed away a few Decembers ago. And they couldn't have the memorial service. Her son, my grandson, is director of music at the Holy Family Catholic Church. And they do a lot of things. They have a little elementary school there and so on and so forth. My first wife's name was Sarah Trejo. And she was the love of my life. I put her through hell. But when we moved up here, we had the best 14, 15 years of our entire life. It was like magic. But getting back to Sis dying, you see all these scars? My wife had shingles one time, and she moaned and groaned about it, and I said, that don't look like anything. Here, the head, and closed both eyes. That's how traumatic it was. And the reason I share that story, that a great many of you sitting here, if you haven't experienced things like that, you will experience that. And I don't mean to get on a, you know, that's kind of a weird trip, isn't it? But it's true. I buried two wives. I divorced the second one. But when she got sick with brain cancer, I went back and took care of her. Somebody asked me, why'd you do that? Looked at him and I said, I think it was the right thing to do. It really was. I was born in Nevada City, California, January 8th, 1932. I grew up in Skid Row, Sacramento. And my older brother was in trouble when World War II broke out. My dad went down there and lied until he was 17 years old, and he went into the Marine Corps, and he stayed in the Marine Corps all his life. And he was in the reserves when Korea broke out, so he got back in, and he made the Incheon landing and all of that. Well, in the meantime, in February, I'll never forget that date, 12th, the judge says, young man, go to jail or go in the Marine Corps. He didn't say the Navy or the Air Force or none of that BS. They joined the Marine Corps. I don't want to be a Marine. And there I was in boot camp. Best thing that happened to me. It literally changed my life. I always drank to get drunk. I don't know about you. But I got to liking it so much that I was doing it all the time. And I like other substances too. And when I got married, and of course in the Marine Corps they don't stand for substance abuse. Booze is okay. That's another deal. But when I got married, I changed my drinking habits. If you can understand that. And I would go along, and I wouldn't drink for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'd make a run. And I would be gone 3, 4, 5. One time I was stuck in Vegas 2 weeks, no money, no car. I don't know how the hell I got there. So I had to hitchhike all the way back home. It took me near, I don't know, 3.5 or 4 days. To get back. And my wife had it at that time. By this time, you know, we had some children. So I put that wife of mine through hell. Well, I started spinning in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's an old meeting down there that's been there forever. It's a 6:30 Sunday meeting. It's a speaker meeting. And I think they celebrated this past year, and Sal moved over to Carlsbad, where the on Harding Street, for the 6:30 meeting, and I think they celebrated here maybe it was 3 years ago, they celebrated 57 years of existence. And I thought, that's the record. So I used to go to a Claremont meeting. It's in a church. And I learned that, and they had a celebration on their anniversary. And they celebrated 58 years. And I always thought that my cohorts and myself really started Alcoholics Anonymous in San Diego because there just wasn't enough meetings. Well, we did start a lot of meetings. And they were great meetings. Now, get back to my story. I came up here, Santa Maria, went into aerospace. Well, I was contracted to them already, along with a friend of mine who's on the program. He's got, I guess, 42 years now, maybe less. Anyway, Bernie Owen and I came up here, and the first meeting we went to was Orchid meeting. And I saw Carl B. there. Well, years before that, we had chartered a bus over Phoenix when they had PRASA, and Carl was a speaker, and he really impressed me. If you ever known Carl, I mean, he could pontificate. Yeah. went up to him, I said, what's your position? He looked at me and just walked away. And I said, well, now, never mind that. So years later, I see him at the Orchid, and I was speaking here one night, and Carl said, right where you're sitting, all the time. I've never heard that man laugh. I was talking, and all of a sudden I look over at Carl, and I said, you know, there's a lot of sobriety in this room. Take Carl, for instance. You know, his first sponsor was John the Baptist. He laughed. I'll never forget that. But that man does something that I still can't do every day. He called no less than 5 fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous 5 days a week. Man, that's a hard thing to do. It really is. So that I call maybe 6 or 7 a week. And he did this thing every day. That really impressed me. It really did impress me. Well, it was true. There weren't many meetings up here at that time when I got up here, and we started meetings. I don't know if some... We had had a temporary Alamo Club over there by the DMV, and a few of us got in and on Ben Wiley, where that, you know, that crummy place was. We worked on that thing and really made it a beautiful, small Alano club in there. And then we did everything in there. We had AA, we had NA, we had, Gamblers Anonymous, and what else did we have in there? Yeah, we even got rid of the rats. About that time, maybe a little bit before that, Richard came to me and he says, Al, what are these traditions? What, were you 2 years?
Probably.
Maybe. And so Roger and I, we sat down and said, hey, we'll help you out. And as a consequence, a very strong, strong fellowship in the other program is still alive and well in Santa Maria. And that's really something. that is something to behold. I don't know about you. I know there's many people in here who have never, ever had to take psych meds or take pain pills or overload themselves on something else. But I want to tell you something. And if you're new, I hope you take this to heart. If you're not clean, you're not sober. If you're not sober, you're not clean. So what do you do when you go in and have an operation and they send you home? You know, take one every 4 hours or as needed. Man, that's an open door. What are you giving me, Dr. Norco? Hey, you want to change that to smack? So I moved down to San Diego and I couldn't walk. And so I went in and had bypasses up in the groin and on the knee, and this leg worked. And a couple of months later, I went in the other one. They had a little problem. But they always sent me home with Norco. You can't give a guy like me that crap. So I gave him to my son. I said, well, I don't know what the hell he did with him. None of my business. No, I said, his name is Casey. And I said, Casey, you take this stuff, I'll be all right during the day. You know, aspirin, ibuprofen would be fine. And so he'd come every evening, and he'd give me one, and we'd sit down and talk, and he said, how you doing, Dad? You want me to leave one of these? And I said, no, you take that crap out of here. I'll be fine. And I was. The other leg, same thing. However, I got to tell you about the story. I married a third wife, Gussie, was not the love of my life, but she did well. I still talk to her today. She's doing fine. She's really doing fine. On July 3rd, 2001, by that time, I had a heart condition. And I'm popping nitro like it's going out of style. And she was gone someplace, and I don't know. And we had a mobile home. And not more than 45 feet away, after you got down to the steps, was our mailbox. I couldn't get down the steps. And she came home. I was just sitting on the step. And she helped me back in. And she put me to bed. At about 11 o'clock on 2001, I got up. All the nitro was gone. And I woke Gussie up and I said, you might want to call an ambulance. I'm having a heart attack. And that's an experience. Holy. Have you ever read Eon Chapman's Proof of Heaven? Oh, man, I'm telling you, I died for almost 4 minutes, and I did not want to come back. The Greeks have a word called enthu. They believe that every person born is born with a spirit within. That's where we get our word enthusiasm. Isn't that wonderful? Doesn't have anything to do with what I have to say. I can't think of anything to say right now, but that's all right. So anyway, I had this quadruple bypass, right? And I was in bad shape, and you know, the doctors, they brought somebody down from up the hill in San Luis Obispo, a team of doctors, and I was so damaged in the heart, they said, he ain't gonna make it to this operation. not a chance. The other doctor says, well, Steve, his name was Steve Froyaldehaven. And he says, we got nothing to lose. And so I take a thing and run it up here and look at the heart, and I'm watching the monitor. Oh, that's interesting, you know. And then they're talking and everything else. And so after it's all over, you know, and a couple of weeks on, and then I got to go back, and I'm zippered with all these staples here and all the way down there. And so I go in and I said, yeah, it was interesting when you guys were talking, and I saw you put this thing up and was examining my heart and everything else, and I heard you talking that I wasn't going to make it and all that sort of stuff. And he says, Al, you couldn't have. You were out. So I talked to another guy, and then I got a hold of this Beyond Chapman's book. That's called an NDE, near-death experience. We go out of our body. So what the sum total is that the Greeks, ancient Greeks, were right. That spirit within us is there. Unless you're a true psychopath. Unless you're a true psychopath, at least I did, I always knew that I did wrong. Whenever I rolled a wino, I knew that was wrong. But I took his damn money and booze anyway. And we used to rob different places. As Sacramento, because of the floods, is built up above and there's an underground, and we knew that. We'd sneak up into the jewelry shops, the booths. Oh, man. We made out. We made out. That's another story. Are you familiar with Coca-Cola? Why do they call it Coca-Cola? My days, it had Coke in it. That's why they call it Coca-Cola. There was no other drink except Coca-Cola. Well, in 1939, the government outlawed it, but they brought it back for the men overseas, men and women overseas. And it would circle back in Army surplus, and we robbed that joint every week. We had to have that Coca-Cola. That was great, man. What a good high. I'll tell you another little story. When I was, you know, with a little psych and everything, I got, they had influenza, and I had to whoop and cough as a side of that. And there was a German outfit called Bayer Aspirin, wanted to invent a cough syrup that was non-addictive, and they named it heroin. And, well, in Greek, that means hero. I should have been well within a week. I'd strung that out over 5 weeks. I was, boom, that was it. That was it. I was hooked. Didn't even know it until years later. Back many years later when I found all this stuff out, and I said, oh, because I couldn't put the two and two together, having one thing on one hand and the other thing on the other hand, and somewhere there had to be a way to understand that, and it really did me good. But getting back to my jury story up here is that there are so many people sitting in this room. Oh, another thing that happens to you when you grow old. I get up this morning and I take a little blood pressure, it's a real tiny thing, and a cholesterol blocker, right? This morning I did the same thing. Twice. It seems like the memory just takes vacations every now and then. So I'm not really sure I am where I am or what I'm doing or who the hell am I. I'm glad I have a driver's license. I hope that thing doesn't start lying to me. I'll be really screwed. But all these things that happened to us, and I know a dear old lady down there, and I've known her for years and years and years, and she went out, but she's back now. She's got another 15 years, I guess. But we were talking about that, and I went back to smoking, and she's a smoker, and we're sitting out in front of this meeting, and we're just getting hysteric. He says, Al, did your memory leave you? I said, what did you say? It's the truth. Several things happen. And I think, you know, and I just marvel at people like Einstein. It didn't bother him. And other people I know, but some of us it does bother. Because really, I get up in the morning, and I have this litany when I go to bed. I use the seven deadly sins as a gauge for my 10th step. Because that's the way I've been doing it for a very, very long time. And it works well for me. By the way, I never get through them without saying, uh-oh. And you know what the biggest offender is? It's what I'm dealing with right now at this meeting. You ready? Pride. Ooh. You know what the next one is? Sloth. That has a connotation that things aren't going very well for you, Al, right now. And it goes on and on and on. And the reason I do that, it sets me up so I can communicate with this power greater than myself, who I choose to call God. And I get into some real communication with him. And then I confess every night. Because it serves me well. And when I get up in the morning, I thank him. And then I renew the whole covenant again. And I got a line in there that I really like. And I thank him for yesterday's sobriety, asking to keep me in recovery another day. And I thank all of my, would you please bless all of my family, my relatives, my in-laws, past and present. When you're married multiple times, you have that. All of my sponsees, all of the people that I know in the fellowship. And I ask them to grace them as he has graced me. Grace is an interesting word. You know what it means? Empowered favor. I think Cicero wrote back in 1002 BC. He wrote that gratitude is the greatest virtue apparent to all. What does that really mean? You guys know me. I'm grateful to be alive, stay sane, sober today. I've been doing that. I didn't know what I was saying. And a virtue is a good trait about a person, right? I didn't know what I was saying when I read that. And then I thought back, well, where did I get that? I can't remember if I heard another person in the room say it, or it just popped into my mind one night going to bed. I don't know where it came from, and I really don't care. But I have used it every night. And in the morning, as I say, I renew that covenant that I have with the God of my understanding. And by the way, I really don't get down on my knees. Because this one doesn't want me down there. So I had to change that a little bit. And I do, I'm usually outside when I do this. I like to go out, I get up rather early. If the sun's coming out, I like to go out there and see it come up. and all of that, and it makes a nice setting for me. I like to commune with this power greater than myself, because without him, I would not be here. Without him, I could not have grieved the loss of Sarah. Without him, I could not have grieved the loss of Rosa. Without him, I could not have walked with Gussie during her time of need. That's how much he means to me. Somewhere in the book, by the way, I have a book that I've had for a few years. You know what I paid for it? $4. 67th printing of the first edition. And I never threw that book away. I think Sarah hid it from me, so I wouldn't. But that's the book I still use today. And there goes, I forgot what the hell I was going to say. Would you like to fill in for me? What I like, you know, they say you could never go home. And this is home. I was up here, what, for almost 27 years? But you can sure the hell go visit. And what a trip that has been. Look, Ronnie Jack, were you living in Kansas? That's really got to be the asshole of creation. I met Ronnie, and he was kind of coming around the program, and he said, "Would you help me move?" And we did, but he scratched my truck. Next thing I know, he's in the room. Been how long, Ronnie?
Now?
19. What a gift. So, you know, whenever I share with someone or a group, I never know or get the full importance of what I say. Now I want to say this. We have some newcomers in here. I want you to know that you're the link to my past and the hope of my future. Because without you, I'm done. You are the lifeblood of this fellowship. And if you get somebody that tells you different, just turn around and walk away. Of course, if you'd like to smack them on the way, that's okay. There's so many people in here. You know, it's wonderful. It's wonderful when you come back and visit and you know so many people, and yet we hadn't seen each other for a long, long time, and here we are right now just sharing back and forth. And I think it's such a trip. It's such a trip. It's such a beautiful trip. I hope you get to experience that. I hope some of you rise. I don't want you to be a circuit speaker, though. I heard a circuit speaker the other night. But I like the spontaneity of one of the very gifts of a God of my understanding. There's two things he's given us. He gives us laughter. Do you know what laughter does for the body? I'm wanting to get technical. It releases endorphins, which gives us a sense of well-being, satisfied in our soul, if only for a moment. That's why laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it has to be here. It belongs here. Let's hope it never disappears. I went to a meeting here not long ago, spoke at the meeting. They didn't laugh. and I thought I was pretty damn funny that night. And get this, they didn't clap for the readers or the newcomers. Applause is part of our program, isn't it? Yeah. I'm glad you agree. I don't have to start a new fellowship. You know, we could probably go on for a long time telling different stories of what's happened around in this area, but I was removed for a good number of years, that's for sure. But when I come back and I see so many of the people that I've known since the start of their sobriety, and that is so cool to see them still here and doing the deal, man. That is worth seeing. I hope you experience that. I demand you experience it. One of these days, I might get, I do too much. Now you know I'm on a trip. I think I'll slack off for a while. Let's see. You know that a Friday night meeting? I really don't like that sucker, secretary. I'd scratch that off my damn list. That morning meeting? Oh, it's fell in decay. There's only 5 or 10 people there. I'd scratch that up. I can scratch myself right out of the fellowship and be drunk just like that. I want you to know I've got a disease that there's no cure for. None whatsoever. And you newcomers, I'm going to say one thing to you. This may be your last chance. I've seen people come in. And they got to try it one more time. They don't come back. They die out there. Yeah, make no doubt about it, man. It's a killer disease. The only treatment is Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells us in the book, somehow I have to be God, depend upon the God of my understanding. And I have to be of service to my fellows, and it also follows with another little thing, and others. Carl B. did both. He was service to other people who weren't in our fellowship. And that's a real tribute. I don't advocate you go around and somebody in the wheel, hey, let me help you. Yeah, you know. That's not what I'm talking about. You know why that's entitled How It Works? That stands for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. That's what it stands for. That's why it's entitled How It Works. When I stop and think about things like that, when Bill W. was composing all this stuff, what was guiding him? And if you read some of his other stuff, he wouldn't guide it at all because it's pretty crummy. Really. But that book and the traditions are perfect. Absolutely perfect. Where did he get that? Where did you get that? I marvel when I think about things like that, because where would we be without a Dr. Bob and Bill W.? Where would we be if we were still alive? You can bet your butt you'd be locked up for whatever reason. But I imagine most of us would die under a bush, loaded on something, be it alcohol or the other thing. That's what happens to people like me. That's why I say, if you come in, you're new, I'll go right up to you and I'll say, this may be your last chance. Why don't you think about that? Of course, a lot of them say, chance to do what? Got another winner here. As many of you know, Gussie and I opened a detox and treatment center, Colesa, and for a long time, I would go to the prisons that were releasing men there that had been through their program, and they guaranteed us a 6-month stay and we could renew it. Not all of them succeeded, many just split, but the few that have done that down through the years, one person I remember, and he's still around in this area, because he was doing so well and got his education and he's working for a big company, I think some kind of brokerage firm, but they expunged his record. It's like he was never in prison or locked up at all. That's magnificent. That's worth the trip. We had one, a biker gal, who, man, she was a pistol. Right out of joy, she took to this program. She went back to college. I'm not done yet. She took to this program. She got an education. And she got a very, very good job. The judge gave her her children back. And I don't know if she's still around. That's none of my business because I haven't been here so long. But it's just an example. Yes, I must be ever present in my mind that there are so many types of miracles given to people like me, and I assume like you. Because I don't know one minute to the next what's going to happen, really. You know, in the shack, there's a statement made in there. For a long time, I was in construction, so I knew how to plan things, damn it. That's called expectations. In Alcoholics Anonymous, that's called a reservation. If this doesn't happen, I'm out of here. So, what do we do? There's a word called expectancy. That put me in the now. If I'm in expectations, I'm either in yesterday or tomorrow, and I can't do anything about now, which might be the very same thing I need to do to save my life one more day. That's what expectancy is. That's a beautiful book. If you've never read it, I don't advise newcomers to read it at all. You have to maybe 3 or 4 years of continuous recovery, and then you pick up that book. It's the most spiritual thing I've ever read in my entire life, and it was just written by a writer that used to write novels, but he sat down and wrote this book. That's about all I got to say about it, because I'm rereading it right now. And I never tire reading that. This is some of the little sayings I get out of there. It comes out of that book. Because it is so beautifully written, and you never know completely what the journey is until almost the very end. which is great. I like those kind of stories. And I about ran out of steam and other things. But I want to let you know that I'm really blessed. And I'm so blessed to be back home to visit with you, even though I might not know you, to see so many friends that I do know, and to share with them a little bit what's going on in each other's lives. To me, that is priceless. You may not get anything out of this meeting except one thing. I guarantee you, those that are new, that you probably will remember. This may be your last chance. Thanks for letting me share.